The feuding factions in the dispute in Northern Ireland seek to place the blame on each other for the shooting by British troops today of at least 29 persons during a Catholic protest rally in Londonderry. 13 of the 29 persons shot were killed. More on the story from Don Anderson in Northern Ireland.
The 1st Paratroop Regiment is being accused of firing indiscriminately at the meeting of demonstrators. General Robert Ford answers.
There is no doubt at all already that the paratroops did not open fire indiscriminately and only fired at the nail bombers, petrol bombers and gunmen who fired at them.
The IRA in Londonderry says six members opened fire only after British troops had fired first. This is Don Anderson for NBC News, Northern Ireland.
It was announced today in Washington that a black political convention, the first of its kind, will be held March 10th in Gary, Indiana. Aim of the convention is to ratify a national black political agenda to increase unity among blacks at the national political conventions and in national, state, and local elections. The Democratic Party plans to launch a major fundraising campaign late this spring. Appearing today on the NBC News program, The Loyal Opposition, Democratic National Treasurer Robert Strauss said the campaign is designed to reach the average American.
Well, we hope for the first time in the history of our party to purchase on commercial rates a massive section of prime and non-prime time on television and launch with the stars of our party, with interesting people from the entertainment world and from the world from the educational world, anywhere from a 4 to 8 hour telethon, and take the case of the Democratic Party to the people, asking that they respond, and that for the first time in a long time, the financing of a political operation be put back in the hands of the small contributors.
Strauss says he thinks if the Democratic Party, through television, can turn to the people properly and articulate the cause, the people will respond. Defense Secretary Laird says there will be no draft calls through March, as the administration continues seeking an all-volunteer army. Budget Director George Shultz says a federal tax increase is not inevitable under present economic conditions, but might be necessary if inflation rises again. Members of the Senate are choosing sides in the debate over legislation dealing with equal employment. Robert McCormick reports from Washington.
The Senate this week will make its first serious effort to pull itself out of the mud hole into which it has been dragged by a bill that was expected to be routine, a bill to extend and expand the powers of the Equal Employment Opportunities Program. The legislation is designed to prevent racial discrimination in hiring and firing. Southerners have said they'll try to delay the measure indefinitely because it allows the Office of Equal Employment Opportunities to enforce its own rulings by issuing cease and desist orders. Southerners want the OEEO to go through the standard court procedures, the method approved by the House. In any event, the Senate will vote Tuesday on a petition to cut off debate by cloture, a method that requires two-thirds majority. If Tuesday's vote fails, another is scheduled for Wednesday. If that too fails, more cloture attempts are expected later. Meanwhile, the Senate is spinning its wheels. Robert McCormick, NBC News, Washington.
The government has filed suit against 28 more retail businesses, charging they have failed to post prices as required by the administration's Phase 2 economic controls. The Cost of Living Council says the new suits bring to 94 the number of such cases pending in federal district courts. A demonstration by members of the Militant Jewish Defense League against the American Nazi headquarters in the Los Angeles suburb of El Monte, California today ended in violence. Rocks and bottles were thrown and there were some fist fights. Police took about 40 persons into custody, most of them outsiders, not originally involved in the protest. Negotiations resume tomorrow morning in San Francisco in a renewed effort to end the strike by longshoremen and warehousemen that has closed West Coast docks from Canada to Mexico. Congress is scheduled to open hearings tomorrow on a bill which would order the 13,000 striking longshoremen on the West Coast back to the piers. The Hour's top story, Australia has announced it is recognizing the new nation of Bangladesh, formerly East Pakistan. This is Don Doak, NBC News.
Listen again for NBC Monitor News.
I've got 3 minutes of music I'll monitor for you. My Sweet Lord with piano by Ronnie Aldridge. Precisely where you are, old friend, and I bid you welcome, those of you who have just joined. Jim Lowe here, and I assure you this will be a most interesting half hour. Interesting, though, I don't think really says it. I think you'll be spellbound when you hear our guest talk about life among the members of the Mafia. He is Gay Talese, the best-selling author, whose latest book about a Mafia family is Honor Thy Father. But right now, we're going to honor Neil Diamond. Not with the kiss of death, but with the first crack of the bat of this particular half hour of Monitor. Crunchy granola sweet.
I got a song been on my mind. And the tune can be sung and the words all rhyme. And it won't offend if you sing at a school. They're liable to send you home, never knowing what you're showing. Think you're growing your own chair. Good Lord. Let me hear that, get me near that crunchy granola sweet. you're drinking, crunching with Nola's knees. And it hired in the house and it didn't say much. And like a man with a tiger outside his gate, not only couldn't relax, but it couldn't relate. Granola sweet. Drop your drink, stop your drinking, crunchy granola's meat.
Crunchy granola sweet. Gay Talese wrote the life story, the life history of the New York Times in his book, The Kingdom and the Power. In his latest book, author Talese writes about a family whose name has appeared innumerable times in the newspaper. In fact, the media gave the name Joe Bananas to the former mafia chief, Joseph Bonanno. And it is the Bonanno family that Mr. Talese writes about in great detail in Honor Thy Father. It's said to reveal perhaps more about the quality of life inside organized crime than anything yet written. And that's due to the fact that the author gained the trust and friendship of Bill Bonanno, Joseph's son. Gay Talese will be our guest for a good part of this half hour. He spoke with reporter Dean Mell.
Mr. Talese, are all mafia members unspeakably rich?
No, it's another misconception. In fact, very few of them are well-to-do. Although they would like you to believe that. We have this interesting and somewhat schizophrenic viewpoint, life that mafia people lead. They're called in the newspaper millionaires, and their wives are complaining they can't get a fur coat or a trip to Miami. The husband is complaining to his wife that he doesn't have the money for a trip to Miami or a fur coat for her. And she's saying, well, look at the newspapers. They have you making, you know, $10 million a year from this racket or that racket. And he says, well, I don't believe what you reread in the newspapers. On the other hand, when he goes out to some nightclub, he has to pick up the check because everyone knows him as a great man of respect and as a man of power and prosperity, and he must keep his front up in order to gain the respect of his subordinates.
But in your
book, he really has to keep up with the Joneses, but it's a terrible thing to do so when you don't have the cash.
But in your book, now, when Bill Bonanno was married to Rosalie at the Plaza Hotel, they got $100,000.
True,
as a wedding gift.
This is. Yes, that's true, but that was 1956. Now, the problem of enduring as a capitalist and organized crime is that the mafia leader, the don of a mafia organization, numbering 300 or 400 men, you don't have any legitimate write-offs. I mean, you can't write off the price of a getaway car or various apartments that you lease for the duration of some little internal feud or some maybe big sidewalk war that's going on. There are no deductions. Now, when you have to pay cash for everything from the support of your soldiers, as they're called, as you know, and wives and keeping the food stashed away and guns and the obtaining of the guns and all the logistics, the telephones, communication is a big problem in the underworld. It costs a lot of money. And when you're paying cash, and it's, you know, they say the fact there's no write-off is a great tragedy for the leaders in organized crime.
On the other hand, they don't have to account for the income either, which is also in cash.
Yeah, so when you have the internal differences and feuds between one faction or another, that source of money, the rackets that they supervise, they don't function as well. I mean, they can't run the numbers rackets effectively if they have to worry about every time they walk across the street of having some car come up at great speed with bullets coming out of the window.
Is the mafia all there is to organized crime?
No. This is, again, one of the many things I touch on. Mafia numbers approximately 5,000 members. It is a very cohesive, or has for many years been, very cohesive, very insular, very structured. 24 mafia dons under them, as you know from what you've read. And this is true. They're captains and lieutenants and button men, which are like the privates. And they're in every part of the United States. Five mafia organizations for many years have been centered in New York, which is really about 2,000 of 5,000 certified members are in the New York area, including part of North New Jersey. But there you can find them in Los Angeles and Chicago and New Orleans and Boulder, Colorado. I mean, any place will have its little, small, might be 4 or 5, maybe 10 members. But organized crime, now we get into something else. The mafia is part of organized crime. It's 5,000 members. In organized crime, they're estimated to be about 100,000. I mean, full-time gangsters. They're gamblers, they're importers, they're extortionists, they're labor leaders, they run nightclubs, they do a lot of things. They have monopolies over linen concessions for restaurants, they control nightclub singers, they control waterfronts. You know, it's the stock, you know what they're in. They're big names. Meyer Lansky, the greatest Jewish gangster, he goes back to the Prohibition period. There are still some Irish and ethnic groups of all kinds can be found in the organized crime establishment, in the criminal establishment. But the mafia gets most of the blitz because they have been. I suggest to you that this is not going to be the case much longer. But since Prohibition, they have been the most unified and somehow more effective. They were better organized. They were a little bit. Except some exceptions, like Lansky's as smart as anybody, and maybe some believe that Lansky's the brightest man in the whole organized crime, and I wouldn't be too quick to refute that. But what's happened now, and it's, I'm afraid, to no credit of law enforcement officials, but the old dons, the men that I'm interested and fascinated by, are now in their 70s and 60s. In fact, you look at some of the greatest convictions in the last 6-7 years, and the people who've been put away in jail. Are men who are close to 70. They're grandfathers. These men belong in an old age home, most of them, or the other ones are so ill with coronary diseases, partly the result, I imagine, the very tense life that they live. And the younger generation, some of them have gone to college, like my main character and honor, like father, Bill Bonanno, he went to college, boarding school before that. They don't really have those qualities that made their fathers unique and successful. What I'm saying, essentially, the sons didn't really have it in ways that the fathers did. They were not equipped to compete and to succeed as their successful fathers did.
Are you saying the mafia is crumbling and on its way out?
Very slowly. It's a process of ethnic progression. I mean, the very smart sons do not want to go into their father's life because it's a tough life. It's not a fun existence. You really have to scramble for the dollar, and I think there are a lot of easier ways to make a living in the legitimate world. And the sons, some of them are doing it. The smart ones are going to college and becoming lawyers or corporation executives and living a really legitimate life. But the ones who are not too bright and do not perhaps have the advantages of college or don't succeed in getting through college, these also don't have the leadership qualities that will enable them to replace their fathers, because what you have going on now are the rising Latin Americans and black gangsters moving up in the underworld. People who in previous generation were relegated to subservient roles, were not getting a piece of the action, were working in like numbers racketeers. They would be the runners or the serfs. And now they want equal rights, and I think it's interesting, part of the civil rights movement is also includes the area of organized crime. The black people want to get a bigger piece of the pie and are.
Gay Talese, author of Honor Thy Father, and we'll continue the interview in just a few minutes. Fascinating, is it not? Stay for more right here on the Monitor Beacon. We'll be right back. It's 22 minutes past the monitor hour. Jim Lowe with you. We're going to continue that interview with Gay Talese, author of Honor Thy Father. In the almost 7 years that it took to write the book, the author was permitted a view of mafia life rarely observed by outsiders. The Bonanno family liked him, trusted him, and opened up to him. Here again is Mr. Talese with Dean Mell.
Did you have to learn a new glossary of words to live with a mafia family?
Yes, I did use code a lot. I came to know some of their own telephone names. They have telephone names, and I picked those things up. So that I
could you give us one? I mean, without
well,
a...
Well, Bill Bonanno, for example, was Baxter. And in my references to him on the phone, I'd be talking maybe to him, and I said, what's Baxter doing tonight? No, I think Baxter probably go out. I haven't heard from him. He might go out at 6 or 7 o'clock. I said, maybe I'll meet him somewhere. And that somewhere meant something, too.
Do they use words like hit and the contract
no, they,
and
I
all
never
that?
I heard the word mafia all the time I was there. I mean, mafia was something that newspapers used. They'd say us, or like, could say... If I was being introduced to someone, he said, well, he's a friend of mine. But if he said, this guy here is a friend of ours, that meant he was in the mafia. But friend of mine, just a personal thing.
Do they call them murders when they speak of them themselves?
No, there is a term hit.
There is a term hit.
Oh, yeah, they say he was hit. They're out to hit him.
What about contract? Do they use that term?
I never heard that, no. No, he's going to get hit one of these days.
Any other euphemisms that come to mind that
well,
struck you as colorful?
Well, how colorful? I mean, they never say gun. Or, you know.
What do they call it? They don't call it... It's called
a piece.
Oh, okay, as long as you don't say a gat.
No.
I couldn't have taken it if you'd have said that. They call it a piece?
Yeah.
What about a knife? Is a knife a knife?
They're not much knife. They're not knife users. I think some of the Latin Americans would be more prone to that. They don't see knife. I never saw a knife. They shot guns.
Mm-hmm.
If you look in a... mafia garage and split-level suburban home. It look like any others, except any other home. Except in the garage, you'll find, in addition to the bicycle and the golf clubs and the golf shoes and the old bureau that's stuffed with things that no one picks around about, you'll also find this stuffed away in some corner, a rifle here and a rifle there.
All in working condition.
And, of course, the one thing about I discovered about the home, on the exterior, you can tell a mafia house and others by the low shrubbery. Sometimes no shrubbery at all, because they're concerned about people hiding behind there and knocking them off as they come home from the office.
That's a greater fear than the privacy they might otherwise
yes.
want.
And of course, their homes are generally well lighted. There will be exterior lights very bright at night, so that. And also, a figure, a man who is in the mafia, will, when he gets out of a car, just when he drives into his driveway and steps out of a car, he gets out in a quite different way than you or I might. Gets out in a frontward way. He doesn't turn his back. He sort of steps out of the car in a frontward position. It's odd to see it done, but they are almost, they're very adept at, very graceful at getting out of cars, and very quick, too. And they also have conditioned themselves to look for fingerprints on the hoods of a car, on the hood of a car, and should there be bombs placed under there.
Any sign at all that their car has been disturbed or tampered
with? They're very aware. I mean, they're aware. You find them as they drive along, have one eye in the rearview mirror, memorizing the arrangement of the cars behind them.
Mr. Talese, did you ever feel your own life was in danger because of your intimacies with the Bonanno family?
I had feelings, yes. Could not support this on this show with giving you detail. I mean, we are oftentimes... not in danger, and we think we are, and the reverse is true.
We've been talking with Gay Talese, author of the new book, Honor Thy Father, a book which studies the rise and fall of the Bonanno organization and also chronicles dying traditions in the mafia. This is Dean Mell reporting for Monitor. Thank you, Dean. Since the story of the Bonanno family is a true story, you perhaps know how the book ends. Bill Bonanno was put in the penitentiary for using someone else's credit card. He's serving a 4-year sentence, which will end in 1974. Your heart. Thank you very much for straightening this out. They've done to my song, Ma. Look what they've done to this half hour. It's all gone. I'll be back, though, after a short break for our stations all across the country. So stay on the line, old friend. Low's the name and radio's the game.
Hey, what's happening? This is Jackie DeShannon, and I've got some words for you who might be cutting out of school before you graduate. You're really not together, because these days dropouts only get the down and out kind of job. Now you can do better than that. So keep yourself together and don't cheat yourself out of a real swinging future. Stay in school and get that diploma.
This is 50,000 watt KOB radio in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
If it's music you want, you've got it right here on Monitor. 5 minutes worth. This set, Cherish by David Cassidy, and the mystery movie theme by Henry Mancini.
Cherish is the word I use to describe the feeling that I have hiding here for you inside. Thank you.
Glad you stayed or decided just now to join us or whatever. Jim Lowe again. And maybe you can give me the name of the pro football player whose name in his game in his spare time is making men's neckties. Only one clue, he's a Miami Dolphin. Whether you guessed it or not, the gentleman will join us right here in a couple of minutes. But right now, Mark Lindsay, and it sounds like something big.
Something big is what I'm living for. Yes, it's what I'm living for.
On the football field this season, Garo Eupremian gained fame as a tiebreaker, but in the basement of his Miami home, he turns into a tie maker. Garo makes neckties that are wide and wild, and it looks as though he's going to score as big in business as he does with the Miami Dolphins. The 27-year-old field goal kicker led the NFL in scoring this season with 117 points. And here he is with sports editor Len Dillon.
Garo Eupremian, have you recovered from the shock of the loss to Dallas in the Super Bowl?
I think so. It feels very funny when you go out there with a lot of hopes, winning the Super Bowl game and going back to Miami with smiling faces. But after the game was finished, I realized it, and I said to myself, you know, I said Dallas tried 5-6 years to get the Super Bowl,
right,
and we tried to get it the first year. Of course, I would have loved it to have it the first year, but I hope that this will be a lesson for us so that we can go next year and be more determined to win more games and win the big one, which is the Super Bowl game.
Do you think Miami was perhaps flat after the two great games they played against Kansas City, of course, in double overtime, and then in the AFC Championship defeating Baltimore?
That could be one of the reasons. But the thing was that we couldn't put anything together, and we had a couple of mistakes that really hurt us. Dallas had a great game. You can't take anything away from them. The runners did a great job of running. Staubach did a great job of passing, and their defense played a great game. So they deserve to win it.
Incidentally, how is the tie business?
It's doing very well, and we're going to have a mail order service coming out, and I hope it will be very successful throughout the whole states.
What is the latest fashions in ties for men?
The ties will be the same as last year. They'll be wide, 4.5 inches wide, but the colors will be more subdued. They won't be as wild as last year because of this new striped shirts that are coming out.
Mm-hmm. What is the price of one of your specialties, Garo?
The ties are going right now at $8 each.
I have to ask you a question that just occurred to me. Did you ever make a tackle on a football field, Garo?
I tried to make a tackle the second game of my career against Green Bay. I kicked off the ball, and Herb Adderley got the ball, and he's coming through with Ray Nitschke blocking for him. I didn't even know who Ray Nitschke was. I could see a 66 number coming towards me and Herb Adderley, and I thought, oh, all I have to do is pick up Ray Nitschke, put him to the side, and then hold Herb Adderley, and that would be all. A lot of people closed their eyes because they didn't want to see a career come to an end in such a short time. I didn't wear a face guard, and Ray Nitschke hits me with his elbow and between the nose and the mouth, and I went 15 yards back on my legs, and I was only about 150 pounds then. So on the impact that he had on me, though, the contact that he had, he hit Herb Adderley, and the ball was fumbled. So I saved 7 points, even though we were losing 35-7. Didn't make much difference.
Garo Eupremian, thank you very much, and good luck in the future.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Len Dillon for Monitor Sport.
Thank you, gentlemen. Eupremian, by the way, says that so far none of his ties have anything to do with football, but he is thinking of doing one that shows a goalpost with a dolphin sailing over it. He's not too commercial, is he? Here's a very commercial sound, minted by Melody, who now coins the nickel song.
Well, you know that I'm not a gambler, but I've been gambled on. They put in a nickel and I sing a little song. But it seems like they always win. And gambling is illegal in the state of mind I'm in. And if I had a nickel for each time that I've been put on, I would be the nickel man and I'd sing a nickel song. Oh, what's been going on. We are only putting in our little to get rid of the lot that's wrong. And if we had a nickel for each time that we've been put on, but I'm being gambled on. They put in a nickel and I sing a little song. La 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 la.
Coming into the stretch here at the Big M. Got a winner for you, too. A big hit by a group called Climax. Precious and Few.
Precious and few are the moments we two can share. Quiet and blue like the sky, I'm run over you. The moments we took in.
About cooking that you can learn from the Galloping Gourmet that sometimes make a big difference. Take stew, which he does, and gives a whole new look and taste.
One of the things that I think really grabs me the wrong way with small chili hands, you know, is to see the center pages of a beautiful food magazine with that magnificent chuck wagon stew, with all those beautiful vegetables peeking through the beautiful brown sauce, looking fantastic. And mine never do, and probably yours don't either. And the reason is because those vegetables are raw. Now, how can we get some distance towards this? Because obviously it's an advantage. I think we should use onions and carrots as a bed of root vegetables for a casserole, and cut them into the largest chunks possible, and cook it for the, say, 2 hour or 1 hour duration of cookery. Then throw those away. They're nothing but sort of expressed albumen, after all the flavors in the juices of the casserole. And then put nicely cut, beautifully fresh pieces of vegetable into that casserole just before it's served, and just cook them through about 10 minutes. Beautiful stuff. Graham Kerr, NBC Monitor.
Thanks, Graham. Sounds like a good idea. I always thought vegetables cooked to death rather tasted like an old sock, and I'm not a big fan of old socks. And that's it for this Sunday evening, old friend. It's been a pleasure as always. See you again next Sunday as usual. Great. Until then, and reluctantly, Jim Lowe says straight ahead. NBC Monitor News. Here's Bill Fitzgerald.
Northern Ireland's Prime Minister Brian Faulkner blames the outlawed Irish Republican Army for the deaths of 13 persons in Londonderry today. Faulkner says the IRA is trying to impose its will on the Irish people. Today's tragedy occurred as 3,000 Roman Catholics gathered to hear Bernadette Devlin and other speakers denounce British internment policies. British troops rushed into the crowd, said they were trying to grab youths who had been throwing rocks and bottles, and when they came under sniper fire, the soldiers fired back, killing 13, wounding 16 others. For more on the story, to Don Anderson in Northern Ireland.
Tonight, Cardinal Conde, the Catholic leader in Ireland, called upon the Catholic community to preserve calm and dignity in the face of what he called this awful slaughter. Both he and the Catholic Bishop of Londonderry have called on the British government to hold an immediate inquiry. Miss Bernadette Devlin, who was addressing the demonstrators when the shooting began, called the episode mass murder. The Prime Minister of the Irish Republic said in Dublin that the troops had been unbelievably and savagely inhuman and has called on Britain to hold a public inquiry. Other politicians in Ireland, Ulster and England have issued statements condemning the British authorities. In short, the killings have provoked such a reaction that the British government is almost bound to make a statement about them to the British Parliament tomorrow. This is Dan Anderson for NBC News, Northern Ireland.
Australia has recognized a new government of Bangladesh, formerly East Pakistan. It's expected that Great Britain and New Zealand will make a similar move shortly. Earlier today, Pakistan announced it was pulling out of the British Commonwealth of Nations after 25 years because of the recognition of Bangladesh, which Pakistan still considers part of her territory. Interviewed on ABC today, Defense Secretary Melvin Laird announced there will be no draft calls for January, February, or March. He said the Nixon administration is pursuing its goal of an all-volunteer army and said substantial pay raises and military pay, he hopes, will be an incentive for young men to join up. Laird said he would rule out U.S. ground forces ever going back into Vietnam, even in an emergency. He declared, however, that U.S. air power will be used to protect American forces who remain in Indochina. Former Commerce Secretary Maurice Stans appeared on NBC's Meet the Press today. He said President Nixon's campaign this year will cost considerably less than the $35 billion the Republicans spent in 1968. Stans is now the president's chief fundraiser, and he defended big GOP contributors. Said even though many have special interests, few seek government favors. Stans thinks conservative businessmen will support the president despite their disappointment over continued budget deficits. Speaking to newsmen in New York today, Democratic presidential candidate Senator George McGovern said he would accept black Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm as a running mate.
She's a serious candidate, and I take her candidacy seriously. I don't write it off. I think it's a factor that we have to deal with. She's making a strong bid, especially for the support of women and black people, and those are two of the groups where I've taken very strong positions. I have been very hopeful that we'd get overwhelming support.
How would you rate a McGovern Chisholm ticket?
I think it'd be very strong.
Congresswoman Chisholm has already announced her candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination. Appearing on CBS today, Federal Budget Chief George Shultz predicted that wage and price controls would continue until April 1973. President Nixon's congressional authority to invoke controls ends at that time. Shultz said he did not know what the limit of controls would be, but they would probably last until the expiration date next year. Shultz added that unemployment can be reduced to about 5% this year, and he does not see a new federal value-added tax or any other new taxes necessary if the government maintains a ceiling on spending. Donald Rumsfeld, director of the Cost of Living Council, disclosed today that the federal government filed suit against 28 retail businesses last week. Rumsfeld said they were charged with failing to post prices as required under the administration's economic sanctions. more than 90 suits are now pending in the federal courts against violators of the new federal regulations. Negotiations aimed at ending the West Coast dock strike resume tomorrow. Union leader Harry Bridges says, however, the men won't work unless there is a favorable vote on a new contract. The hour's top story, British troops killed 13 persons, wounded 16 others in Northern Ireland today.